Well, welcome to the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch. Today, what Josh Kelly's re-signing means to GWS. Is the mid-season draft good for the AFL? Was Melbourne's season over before round one? How the Eagles can turn the season around with a big win against the Suns, and Frio battling a history of big losses in Adelaide.
You're quite brilliant.
Yeah, terrific.
Oh, that is... Oh, that's what it is.
The stadium holds its breath.
It's Duff and Quarters.
Brought to you by Tab Touch.
Well, hello everybody. Thursday, which means it's time for the second edition this week of the Duff and Quarters podcast. We are brought to you by Tab Touch Quarters. This is the podcast that will...
prick your attention, Duff.
It certainly pricked Ross Lyon's attention. Glenn?
Well... poor old Aaron Norton. I love Aaron Norton, by the way. Might be the best contested mark in the competition already. But the Joel Hamling comments by Luke Beveridge, look, great for us, great fodder for the media. Keeps the ball rolling. I don't like it, though. I don't like it when a coach, clearly his raison d'etre is to clear the path for Norton to get a few more free kicks. But I just don't like it. I'm not sure how much truth there is in it either, really.
Well, I don't think Hamling is a holder. I think whatever happened on Saturday night, and you'd have to go back through.
He's a run and puncherer.
Well, as Ross said, he's a player that uses his speed and his jump and gets his fist in. So you're absolutely right. Coach's motivation here. Beveridge wants Norton to get free kicks from the umpires in future games.
Yeah.
Ross Lyon, in speaking out about it yesterday, wants to make sure that Joel Hamling doesn't get pinged three times in the first four contests on Sunday against Adelaide, because the umpires have said, oh, hang on a minute, Joel Hamling must hang on a bit. So I think that's why we don't allow coaches to comment too much on umpiring, Glenn.
I like Bevo. I really do. I think he's done a great job. I think it might be his 100th game coaching the Bulldogs this weekend too. I think he's got a 55% winning record. And if you're a Doggies fan, that's pretty good. Has been a great coach for them. Sometimes I just, you know, I shake my head a bit, but I guess we do that with all the coaches, don't we?
We absolutely do that with all the coaches. Round seven.
Yeah, amazing. Firstly, again, I say this every week, but gee, it's come upon us quickly, round seven already. But this will be a bit of a sorting out weekend. I still think that it's got a few movements this season, but we'll find out a bit this weekend, I reckon.
I like the column in the West Australian today, where you talked about how don't be too alarmed, Eagles fans, because basically they have a month where they can steady, and also there is a lot of volatility in the ladder after round six.
There is, and this season in particular, Duff, with rule changes, changes to the way coaches can actually coach, and I think that this season more than ever there'll be movement. Really interesting looking at the last 5 years and where teams were at round six, where they were at round 23. The top four, generally three teams remain, but there's a lot of movement in that bottom half of the eight. I think this will be more than ever this year, even from one to four, I think. So, strap yourselves in, as I said. You know, it'll be like a ride in a Kolkata rickshaw for many teams for the rest of the year.
So, big news yesterday. I'm not sure how significant the quirky bit of the news was, though. Josh Kelly.
Yes.
Well done to GWS, getting Josh Kelly's signature for at least another
massive
two seasons.
Massive news for that footy club.
Yep.
Might be the biggest thing to happen to that footy club so far, I'd say.
Absolutely. And hopefully Stephen Coniglio goes in on Josh
Kelly.
Yeah,
well, that's really interesting, the body language there, because I was listening to an interview with Dave Matthews, the Giants CEO, during the week, talking about Kelly. Now, clearly Kelly took unders to stay at the Giants, and that's the pathway a lot of the players are taking now. There are many, many offers out there from other clubs that were worth more than he's getting. He's hoping that Coniglio follows the same path. It's this buy into a premiership. Let's keep ourselves together. Let's take a little bit under. I mean, they're still well paid, but really interesting times for them. Very big signing. And it'll be significant in making up Coniglio's mind.
Hope so. I mean...
So do I.
As much as I would love to see Stephen Coniglio come and play for Fremantle...
or the Hawks... Which no, is with
go oh, away.
No, he's a big chair.
Go away. They're... Four flags in 8 years. Go away, Glenn.
Yeah, but there's a war chest, stuff, you see. There's a war chest. There's a lot of money being offered by Hawthorn. But, you know, I'd love him to play for Hawthorn. But I would hope that he stays at the Giants.
Absolutely.
I want to see them have success there. I want to see the game grow in Western Sydney.
I feel exactly the same way. And hopefully similar things happen up on the Gold Coast. So that was big news yesterday.
What about the news today? I don't think I'm going to eat red meat again, Duff. For some inexplicable reason, St Kilda has released a video of Jarran Geary's compartment syndrome surgery on his thigh. So he had really bad corky. Compartment syndrome is really serious stuff. I mean, Absolutely. You can lose a limb if you don't treat it. So fortunately, he's fine. He'll recover from it. But they showed this gruesome graphic footage of the whole thigh sliced open today, Duff. And I'm one of those things that I wish I hadn't seen it, to be honest. I don't think I'll eat red meat again. Yeah, it wasn't pretty, but he won't, you know, that will expedite his return, which is great for the Saints.
All right. A bit of angst about the mid-season draft, two quarters, about the eligibility criteria.
Well, AFL making on the run again. I mean, it's this eligibility change so that there are players who had not nominated for last year who thought they were eligible and they're not. So I'm not sure what the AFL's... I think they might have to make some quick manoeuvres to make some more players eligible.
It was ill-conceived from the outset. I'm all for greater player movement. It should be a mid-season trading period.
Okay, so let's just explain what it is. Is some club, this is not really a draft to get players in to improve your list at the moment. It's a draft to spec for the future. So you get a player in, you see whether he's up to it, and you can make your decision at the end of the year. You get him in before the national draft.
How do you know whether a player's up to it or not when he comes in off a second-tier preparation to try and play first-tier footy? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I guess you get you might get a chance later in the year to have a look at him if you get him into your system for a little while.
Yeah, I think it's rubbish. I think mid-season trade, bring it on next year. I think that'll be fantastic. I would be guessing that in a mid-season trading scenario, there would be a lot of players would change hands, and I think it would be a good thing. Mm. It would be a win-win situation for a lot of clubs. And as long as you didn't allow clubs to take the opportunity to trade a lot of draft picks, send players on to another club and put them from way outside premiership contention into premiership contention, i.e. to change the entire nature of the season, I think as long as you had safeguards in place to do that, I think that would be a
So little a black holes thing. On a team's list, you address that.
Well, look, classic example, all right? Darcy Cameron as a forward ruck at Sydney is coming from a long way back. But if he was somewhere else, he may play. So I think in that case, if a club had a significant or specific need for a forward ruckman, Darcy Cameron would be right in the frame to go to that club and play AFL footy this year. And I think that's the classic example. Whereas at Sydney, he's not ahead of
Sinclair.
He's not ahead of Naismith.
Yep.
They've got McCartan coming in, who's obviously going to be the understudy to Buddy. He's probably coming from too far back to make an impact at that club. Let's get on to round seven quarters. Let's see if we can tip a winner.
How many did you get last week?
Eight.
Yeah, so did I. I got all excited thinking I had nine. Then I realised I tipped St Kilda, not to Adelaide. But anyway, there you go. Friday night, Marvel Stadium. Collingwood 3 plays Port 5. Bad news for Port. Robbie Gray's out for a month. He's not been at his usual self. He did have some health concerns over the pre-season or the post-season last year. But I hope he has a quick recovery and we see the best of him because he's a ripper, Robbie Gray. Collingwood v Port. Port playing beautifully. Not without, obviously, Port are in with every chance, as they are every week this season, the way they're playing. Marvel Stadium, under the roof, nice quick surface, quick side. You know, players like Rosie and Durs are injecting into that side now. But I'm going with Collingwood. I think Cox is a big out. But Elliott, assuming he returns, and I think he will, that mid forward size, they're almost at full strength, so it might release to go into the midfield. I think Collingwood's beautifully settled. I think they'll win, but it's going to be one of those games where I'm not as confident as others with my tip.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty confident about this. I think the thing about Port is that I think Port thrives on bigger grounds now because they've got the kids, they've got the speed. I don't think Marvel Stadium is a quick surface, but it's not a big ground. And I think when they run, they'll be running into traffic. Collingwood are very well organised.
At the back.
At the back.
Beautifully well organised.
And I think that that's going to be challenging for guys like Butters and Rosie and Dersma. I'm reasonably bullish that the Pies will get this done by about four goals.
Yeah, I'm going to say 8 points, so, but we're both with the Pies. Saturday at the MCG, Melbourne 18 v Hawthorn 11. I'm going with the Hawks. I'm going to say they'll win by about a couple of kicks, but Viney a big out for Melbourne, courtesy of that brutal hip and shoulder last week. Melbourne has to win this game. If they're going to be in contention for the finals, they have to win this game. So it's a really big contest. And Hawthorn, it's really hard to get a line on what Hawthorn is at the moment. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. Hawthorn will be winning this quarter.
Oh, yeah, look, I think they will. They control the ball. They use space. They can do that with Melbourne. The problem is Melbourne, I thought, were pretty good last week. They get plenty of the ball. They're winning the contested position, but it's that disconnect into the forward line. If they can find something, you know, early, then I think that Hawthorn defence, which has still got a few holes in it, will be under a bit of pressure, and that's Melbourne's best chance. I'm picking the Hawks, as I said, but I still think this is not the Hawthorn that you pick with a lot of confidence as you used to.
I agree with that, and there's no such thing as a foregone conclusion in the AFL. Interesting article written by colleague and good friend of mine, actually, in The Age. Don't want to pump up the competition, but yeah. Jake Nile.
Great man, Jake.
He wrote a piece this week about David Misson, the Melbourne strength and conditioning coach, fronting the board well before the start of the season and basically warning them, we're in trouble here.
With their pre-season. So what did they get so wrong?
So, no, it was just too many surgeries and too many players in rehab for too long. So he said up before the 2018 season, they had 39 players complete a minimum of 33 sessions. And before this season, they had 23 players complete 22 sessions.
Okay.
And he basically said, we've had too many miss too much. Now, this is relevant to you and your club because Hawthorn's actually started keeping data on this stuff. And Hawthorn has come to the conclusion that if you reach a critical mass of players who've missed too much of the preseason, you can't win.
Yep.
Your season's done before the first ball is bounced. Basically, Hawthorn reached that conclusion after keeping data on this for sort of about 10 years, I think. And they worked out, okay, all our really strong seasons were after we had good pre-seasons, and all our the bad seasons that came out of nowhere, we had really dodgy pre-seasons where a lot of players missed a lot of work. So there is science to back this up. The D's are gone, mate. They're gone. Their best bet is to try and not panic, play some players who did have strong pre-seasons, I think, and just disregard the results and then get to a point somewhere in the back half of the season where they can put mini preseason into all these guys that have had all these disruptions and try and play some good footy before the end of the year that gives their fans some hope.
So if they're not into minimising damage or damage control, then do they play Wiedemann, they play Tom McDonald, let them settle in attack, don't move them around.
I don't think Tom McDonald's fit.
Yeah.
I think he's one of the ones that
he's certainly exposed in that forward line.
Got an issue with. So I'd keep going with Wiedemann, absolutely. I think, you know, they have to accept that they
can play.
They've taken the plunge with, you know, shipping Jesse Hogan out and bringing Stephen May in. That means Sam Wiedemann is going to have to stand up and attack. So you might as well get the games into him. You might as well get him to 50 games. I just think it's all gone pear-shaped for the D's, and it might have gone pear-shaped before round one. Hawthorn by, well, I'm saying minimum 30 points for me, quarters.
Interesting, just a side issue there. Jack Gunston, hasn't kicked a goal for 4 weeks.
That's amazing, isn't
it? Yeah, he has played a little bit in defence, but you don't see that happen too often, so expect him to get on the board. GWS v St Kilda at Manuka, 4 v 6. I didn't think I'd be saying that after round seven, certainly not in St Kilda, but Toby Green returns, weapons in attack, Canelio, Whitfield, Kelly. What more can I say? I think St Kilda need a big scalp to be considered legitimate, but I can't see it happening in this weekend. I think GWS, I'm going to say by a minimum 30.
Yeah, St Kilda will miss Jarryn Geary, won't they, really? As Jarryn Geary, like, would you have, if you did A's, B's, C's and D's on a list, what would you regard Jarryn Geary as?
I'd have him...
Good B?
I'd have him A-, if that makes sense.
I'd have him B or B+, but he's more important than that.
He's really important.
Do you know what I mean?
He's the leader. Yeah. I mean, he gives them... He's their spiritual leader and their on-field leader. So he is a big, big, big loss.
And all the values that they extol as a club... He absolutely epitomises those values as their captain. So he's a massive loss for them.
And so is Loney too. Fortunately, it's not an ACL. I think he's about 8 weeks out. But, you know, they are a side that couldn't afford to lose players. You know, they had to be all up and about to be competitive with the very pointy end. So I think we'll see a bit of levelling out at this period. So, as I said, I think GWS by about 30.
Yeah, I'll go GWS by 4 goals. I think the Saints will have some wheels, so they'll test them a little bit, but I think GWS have definitely got wheels, big wheels with a big engine.
Brisbane v Sydney at the Gabba. Sydney have won 11 in a row against the Lions. It won't be 12.
I wouldn't have thought so.
No. Oh, there's a lot of commentary very bullish about Sydney this weekend. No Buddy again. I just think we're in that redevelopment year. We're not allowed to use the word rebuild. Redevelopment year for Sydney.
Restump, rewire, replumb.
Yeah. Look, as we keep saying, if you're a Sydney supporter, you've got to thank your lucky stars, what you've seen the last decade. They've been a massive side. You know, they've been a combative side. They've given you 100% every week. And so, well played, Sydney. It's now a time to get the next batch through, and it's going to take a little bit of patience. So I think Brisbane at home with... great defence, you know, a lot of options in attack, nice settled midfield. I think they win this pretty comfortably.
Yeah, I'm going to go Brisbane by, I reckon 6 goals up there.
Yeah, I'm going to say 7 goals. Western Bulldogs v Richmond at Marvel Stadium. Again, 18th, the key to the Dogs, they can take anyone on in the middle, but 18th for goal kicking accuracy. There it is in a nutshell, I think, this year where the Dogs have gone wrong. 18th for goal-kicking accuracy.
And poor old Aaron Norton, if he was worried about Joel Hamling, I'm guessing he gets Dylan Grimes.
Yeah, so good luck with that. You know, they've lost players. They've lost, but Richmond, I think, is back in the hunt. They're going to be right up there at the pointy end, I believe. And I think this will be about a 4-goal win to Richmond. I don't think it'll be any more than that. I don't think the Dogs are going to get smashed this year.
The one rider I'll put on that quarters is that Marvel Stadium is not a ground that absolutely suits the Tigers. Some of their poorer performances since they started the premiership run back in 2017, some of their poorer performances have come at Marvel. They did beat Sydney at Marvel, I think, early this year. So, but that said, the Doggies are in a position to be sterner opposition than the Swans were.
Always are.
Yeah.
They always are. So we're both on the Tigers.
I'm only by about 20 points for me, I reckon, on this one.
West Coast v Gold Coast at Optus Stadium. West Coast 12 v Gold Coast 13. I'm sure we weren't predicting that at the start of the year.
And it won't be that after this.
No, look, West Coast have lost 10 of their last 11 quarters. I think this is a great opportunity. I expected the Gold Coast to come out of the blocks and then just taper off. I mean, that's what you expect with a lot of youth in your side. I think that's what we're seeing now. They've smashed last week, in fact, the last couple of weeks. I think this is a great opportunity for West Coast to get the game back on their terms. As Adam Simpson said last week, the first point of it is winning the actual footy.
Yeah.
So Gold Coast won't just stand back and let them do that. But they need to win the footy and then get the game back on their terms. Start building a bit of confidence because the next 6 weeks, they're all gettable, the games for the Eagles, and they can easily go into the bye in pretty good shape. It's up to them, as you said in your column this week, you know, it's the alarm clock, not the snooze clock.
Yeah, no, I just... There's a lack of urgency about them, which bothers me. And so this is a great chance for them to steady their season and make sure they're in good position at the halfway point. But you know what I want them to see? As long as they get the W, I want to see them start to re-establish what Adam Simpson would call their way. So whether it's a 5-goal win, an 8-goal win, or a 12-goal win, I would take the 5-goal win as long as I started to see them play their way, which means everyone takes their turn at the contest. They retain good balance on the inside and the outside of the contest, and they start to shift the ball again.
And get control of that footy, you know, minimal, great fuel efficiency, the Eagles. They don't have to use too many tickets up. They just use that ball beautifully. So, you know, I think, as I said earlier in the week, I don't think it's a premiership hangover. It's probably a premiership headache. And, you know, you are the focus. You become the focus of other teams. But they're not. It's not. It doesn't take much to turn it. And I think this is step one.
I think the problem is when you get to 3-3 and you've already lost one at home and you've copped a couple of butcherings on the road, then what you deny yourself is the wriggle room to have a mess up later in the season.
You are only one win from second at the moment.
Correct.
So that's the way the season's going.
But you need to be top four,
of course,
in Perth to have a serious tilt in it. And
probably top two, as we always say.
Yeah. And so they've had a couple of unnecessary losses, and they need to be careful that there is no more. They'll win this.
They've had three bad losses.
I'm saying this is going to be a 50-point spread. And I reckon if Gold Coast gets out of this with a 50-point spread, I think they might be a little bit relieved. West Coast will have their pride pricked, and they'll be looking for some comeuppance.
I'm going to say 42 points. I'll give the Gold Coast a little bit of respect given what they've shown us so far this year. On to Sunday, Carlton 8 v North Melbourne 17. Big outs for Carlton. Cruiser, McGovern, Simpson. Cruiser particularly, huge out for Carlton. And North Melbourne, I thought, were pretty good last week.
Yep.
Having said that.
Is this Marvel or the MCG?
This is at Marvel. Carlton has the second best percentage of, and I reckon percentage is a good indication of how you're going. Certainly if you're a young side coming up, they've got the second best percentage in AFL history of a team at 1-5. It's 93.6. The only better percentage was Essendon in 2006, which was 96%. So it shows you they're on the right track. They're scoring more. They hit 200 points a couple of weeks ago and they beat the Dogs. So I like what I see from Carlton. And I think this is probably a test of where they're at. Now you can miss a couple of players. And look, I'm going to pick them to win this. Of course, North's every chance. But particularly if Ben Brown gets on the end of a couple. But I'm going with Carlton.
Okay. I reckon I know how, you know, that's a great piece of history you've just given me there. You know how they got that great percentage from being 1-5?
How, Duff?
They're 1-5.
Yeah.
They've won one and they've lost five.
Yeah.
And
but the losses obviously are much better losses than they have been.
I get that. I understand they've been involved in close games and they also had a really good win when they did have the win. But
probably should have. I mean, really, as I think they probably took more from the Hawthorn loss last week than Hawthorn supporters did.
I'm going to tip North Melbourne. And I'm not doing it with a lot of confidence. I reckon you said Cruiser. Cruiser is a massive factor for Carlton, isn't he? He's that big-bodied, bulldozing ruckman who has great follow-up on the ground.
Talk about spiritual leaders. Yeah. I think he's theirs.
Yeah. And I didn't mind the way North Melbourne battled on last week.
Oh, it was a pretty good loss.
You know, they were never going to win it, but I didn't mind the way they battled on. I hope they continue to play Zeeble in the midfield. Cunnington's out there again because he keeps getting away with donging people. So no doubt that someone will get donged in the general vicinity of the ball by Ben Cunnington. I just think that maybe North will stand up and get this one done.
Adelaide v Frio, Adelaide Oval. Adelaide 9 versus Frio 2. It's got a nice ring about it, Duff. I'm sure it has to your ears.
So you're going home team or on ladder positions?
If this was here, I'd be going for home team. It's in Adelaide, so I'm going to pick Adelaide. I like the way their forward line looked last week without Josh Jenkins.
Mm.
So I think he's got a way to go to come back into that side. I thought Himmelberg showed a bit.
Yep.
Taylor Walker looked a bit more, just the movement was better in that forward line without Josh Jenkins.
He looks better when they play him deeper, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. So, and he looked a bit more like his old self. What Frio will gain is confidence from a couple of weeks ago when they won in Canberra against the odds, against JWF. That sort of a win shows we can travel, we're the rank underdogs, and we can pull it off. But I just think Adelaide having had its sluggish start for the year. I think they don't want to lose these types of games, and I'm pretty confident they'll win this game. It won't be easy. The way Frio's playing, you know, very settled team. Mm. But this, I'm prepared to say they'll drop one here.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Adelaide because it's in Adelaide. Fremantle doesn't have a great record in Adelaide.
Last five at Adelaide Oval by an average of about 70 points, 68 points.
Now, they have been pretty ordinary over that period of time, but I also remember them getting rolled by Port Adelaide at Adelaide Oval in, I reckon it was either 2013 or 2014 when they were really up and going. So it hasn't been the happiest hunting ground for them. Ross calls it a bit of grass with some sticks at the end of it, but at the end of the day, some grass and sticks suits you more than others, and clearly Adelaide Oval hasn't suited Fremantle. If I'm Ross Lyon, I'm doing something about Brody Smith in this one. I think the thing that's jumped off the page at me in the last two or three weeks is that when they're going, he's going off the half-back line.
And when they weren't going, he wasn't going.
Oh, he wasn't there. He did his knee in that final in 2017, and they weren't the same team after that, and they certainly weren't the same team all through 2018. I'm playing a defensive forward. It would be, I think, either Rhys Conker or Andrew Brayshaw would go to Brody Smith, and his job would be make sure this guy isn't turning into an 80-metre player every time he gets the ball, you know, running 20, kicking at 60. I think if you take that away from them, I think Fremantle are a chance to pull off an upset here, but I'm tipping Adelaide by, I'm going to go under 10 points.
Yeah, I'm going to say a couple of kicks too. I don't think it'll be one-way traffic by any means. Final game of the round, Geelong v Essendon at the MCG, 1-10, but Essendon's a pretty good 10.
Cracking game.
Probably match of the round if we really look at it. This is the sort of game they'd lose last year, Geelong. Essendon need a win against a Geelong to be a contender. They all but beat Collingwood on Anzac Day. There was a kick in it. But this would really aid their belief. I just think they need this sort of a win. So, and it's certainly capable, but they're going to hit a defence. They're going to hit a wall. I think Geelong's number one goals conceded, I think 56 goals they've conceded in total this year. They're pretty good. That's a pretty good number. You know, Blissavs and Harry Taylor looks fully fit, you know, at centre-half back. I think we know about their pressure forward line, and obviously we know about their midfield. So I think Geelong at the moment is probably just a bridge too far for Essendon, who are showing all the signs of being of making September and having an impact.
So game style is going to be critical here, Quarters, I reckon, because Essendon troubles some team, don't they? When they get that speed off the back with McKenna, Saad, when those guys start breaking through the middle at pace and they get your defenders turned around and they can really bother you, I think they trouble West Coast because of that. Because West Coast intercept defence can't get set because the ball travels so quickly, either in these guys' hands or through the air. And Dylan Scheel, I think, adds to that speed of ball movement.
As long as he can kick straight.
But the question I've got is, does that trouble Geelong? And the answer is, I don't know. Yep. So I'm going to tip the Cats.
Go on.
But I'm going to be a genius in hindsight here, and I'm going to say we may look back on this afterwards and say, well, Geelong, a bit like West Coast, is a team that Essendon can trouble. I think Essendon needs a specific style of game. And it was interesting, one of the comments made by one of the Collingwood players in the wake of the Anzac Day clash was very much, we let them play their way. And if you let them play their way, they are a very damaging team. And I think so. The competition is aware that if you give the Bombers that bounce off the back, that speed of ball movement, then, they're very hard to stop.
I have enough trust in the Cats' forward line at the moment to not allow that to happen.
How was Gary Ablett's first quarter?
Sensational.
We probably mentioned it the other day.
We did. But, I mean, I think it's a new lease of life for him.
Yeah.
You know, less time or not much time in the midfield. That forward role he's playing now, his distribution in that inside 50, we know that he's capable of it, but those players have lifted around him. So it's a real. I have a lot of faith in that forward line at the moment.
You talk about.
I couldn't say that last year about that forward line.
No, you talk about historical stats. generally speaking, if a player's had a good game, he might have two goal assists. Gazza went to quarter time with four.
Yeah.
On Sunday.
Yeah, it's amazing.
At quarter time. It'll be interesting to know how many players have gone to quarter time in a game with four goal assists next to their name.
Not too many, I'd suggest.
Phenomenal performance. All right, so we're both on Geelong. What's our margin?
I'm going to say 8 points. It was a close game.
I'm going to say 20, because I'll say Geelong can get him by 20. I wouldn't be at all surprised to see if this one rolls the other way.
Exactly.
Though. Yep. All right, well, thank you very much for joining us today. We'll be back on Tuesday with a full wrap of the round, talking about the implications and our revised expectations after what is going to be a huge round 7 in the competition. Thank you to Tab Touch for bringing us to you today, and we will talk to you after the round.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch.